host Justin Washam. With me is one, the only. His name is the Kevin Miller. Com. And every time I tell him to jump and press the circle button. So jump and press that circle button, Kevin.
Oh, thanks, man. That's pretty nice of you. Going all retro on me. That's pretty good. What's this song all about, man?
Time to get lucky, but put done with Mario Paint.
What's
the strong
Mario
rat right now?
Yeah. It just sort of happened.
I know.
It felt appropriate.
Do millennials know who Strong Rat is?
Debatable. It'd be something that was
is
fun.
Is he still doing his emails?
No. He works on Yo Gabba Gabba.
Strong Rat?
Yes. one of the brothers' chaps, Matt Chapman, is over at Yo Gabba Gabba. They haven't updated since 2010.
Did I tell you that show was created by Mormons?
I don't know they were Mormons. The Chapman, brothers'
I don't
chaps?
Know did the brother Chapmans create Yo Gabba Gabba?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
The creators of Yo Gabba Gabba were Mormons, because I have a bit where I talk about Muno being vibrator-esque in his appearance.
And they're like...
And somebody came up to me after the show, and they said, you know, our friends created Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, that's funny.
And they said, if they heard you say that, she goes, I think it would make them laugh. She goes, because it's funny, because they're Mormon.
Mm.
She goes, they couldn't have anything, it couldn't be further from the truth.
They wouldn't have known.
I think it's oppressed, and that's why it comes out.
It's good. That needs, is that going in the act?
No. Like I have the explanation of the guy coming after me saying you shouldn't give Benadryl to a
wheels
baby.
Within wheels. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
There's
maybe
a lot going
maybe.
On.
I don't know. I need to get out of that stuff. I need to get onto the new. I need
what's
to make
new?
Another album.
Let's go now. New
right
album.
Now?
Right. Go.
Okay. Let's see. What if I go improv on it? What should we talk about in the new album?
Tell me about having two sons and the dynamic of two sons.
The dynamic of two sons making it. Let's see. How can I make it funny? Oh, it's. It's rough having two sons. People don't. I don't know why I'm yelling.
I know, it was like, I haven't seen your show in a while. Is this how you do it? I was like, you have a whole new persona. I need to get out of the house and see your show.
Here's what two sons make you feel like. Shut up. Please, I just want to be a person again. Stop. Just give it back to him. Why do you have to, you have 40 bajillion, this is a phrase I say all the time, you have 40 bajillion toys in your room, and yet you want to play with a stapler. I say things like that all the time. Not a stapler. The stapler's out here. They can't get to it. But what does he want to play today? He played with a paintbrush. That was what happened today. I was like, and he clocked his brother in the head with it. And I was like, I go, why are you just like hit him? I go, why are you playing with that? Why can't you play? You have a room full of toys. Look forward to that, millennials, when you have kids, because they're going to have even more cheap crap from China.
Yeah, well, it'll be downloadable.
So you'll have plenty of room.
Yeah, it's just digital.
In the closet you live in.
That's pretty fun.
That's horrible.
No, it was pretty good.
I think
not
here's what I just learned in that little moment right there.
Mm.
To do stand-up, which is, here's the other thing, which is why I wish now, at this point in my life, I wish that I would have maybe leaned a little bit more towards radio.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I'm original enough to be a really good stand-up comic.
Yeah.
But I know how I could talk and things, and
yeah,
I could be funny.
Host.
But then there's also an element, though, that I do need a live audience to have feedback, which would not work in radio, obviously.
Depends on the show.
Yeah.
And you have a level of integrity for your performance that I think a lot of radio hosts don't have. You shared some stories going on the road and being shocked at what the DJ, how the DJs didn't care what was happening or not happening on the air.
Oh.
And stuff. And so a lot of...
I just had one of those. I just did... I was on Mega 97.9. All the old school oldies, and I got to drop a joke that I had said on my dad podcast, where because it's all like it's R&B songs from the 90s, so it's like I wanna sex you up.
Oh yeah,
all TikTok.
All those songs made
stop,
me uncomfortable
stop.
In
right.
eighth grade dances.
Yes, and I go so I did their new tagline where I said Mega 97.9 moistening minivan seats for the last 15 years.
Woo.
So the guy didn't even this is how much of a wall I was talking to on this radio station. He didn't even balk or laugh at that, which I thought was okay funny. I go, yeah. I, and I, he kind of goes, "Uh-huh." And I go, I go, do you understand? I go, you guys play really sexy music. That's what I was doing there. He's like, yeah, we do.
Oh wow. And I go,
and then he somehow came about that he was saying that there's like some kind of freaky level, like floor on the where the studios all are. And he goes, level two, that's where the parties are. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah, sometimes it gets awkward. And then I came in with my other one because I thought people listen. It's a station that people would play at work.
Yeah.
You know how they do that?
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that it would be awkward to hear, like, I'm going to knock a boots all night long and stuff like that. Right. So Mega 97.9, making cubicles awkward all day, every day.
That's also good.
He didn't think that was funny.
Oh,
was,
you're making fun
my
of
favorite
it.
Part is we told a story about a cholo, me accidentally picking a fight with a cholo the last time I was in Fresno. And then randomly we're just telling a story and we hit a punchline and the DJ leans in and goes, Mega 97.9.
Nice.
And then just looks back at us. Like, so here's how it sounded like, blah, 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 Mega 97.9.
Ooh, weird.
Yeah, dude, dead air. I was like,
Are we? Did we go to?
I just called it like it was. I go, I don't know what you want us to do right now. I go, you just.
Good for you. To be
you
honest.
Said it like it was close. Well, here's what I think.
Yeah.
I think that people listen to podcasts or people that when they listen to the radio, that's what they want. I mean, realistically, now I'm not saying that it's not a gift that this guy has. This guy has a talent to talk about mattress sales.
Yeah.
Like they're exciting that I could never do.
Right. To read that cold copy. Yeah.
Yeah. He could pick it up and go, oh, we're going to be down there all day giving away your free mattress to the 21st person to walk up and say Mega 97.9 helps you sleep, and they could do that, and they can and it just
you
flows,
could do that.
It just flows out of them. I think at some point I would have to mock it or in some way, shape, or form.
That's okay.
In order to be alive, but I think people would listen.
Yeah,
like that's,
yeah, yeah.
And so that's
there
where,
are some DJs that are real like that. They're like, I've been here some copy, and then they go into it, and that's just their shtick.
Yes.
Let's flip the script. You give me a topic, and I will improvise.
You want to do some? You want to do some stand up?
Yeah.
Let's talk about now. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I want to set you up for success.
Oh, I love it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, is it like? Do you want like a specific topic of your life, like you gave me, like that's a dynamic to your life, or do you think it would be something that you know? Like, you know?
I don't. Yeah, I don't know. You too many options.
Too many options.
You just give me. I'm the improviser.
All right. Okay.
So you give me a thing, and
let's hear some stand up on the Millennium Falcon. Let's do that.
Here's the thing about the Millennium Falcon. It's neither a bird nor was it anywhere near a millennial thing.
Yeah.
It's a disc in space with a little crunchy part in the front. What was the crunchy part in the front for? And it's got a satellite dish. Does he get DirecTV in there? Han Solo goes to the back and he's like, I'm going to check out what's happened on Sunday morning ticket.
Yeah.
I have a hard time imagining that the satellite dish did anything important because here's the other thing. None of the other ships had a satellite dish.
Nope.
Where did the word Millennium Falcon come from at all? If there was some more feathers on the outside, then I would believe it. But until that point in time, I'm calling it crunchy disc with a satellite dish.
I was going to go spaceship spork.
Oh, that's good.
You know,
good.
It's
yeah,
round
yeah, yeah.
and then it's got
good.
A fork in it, too. Like,
that's good. Yeah.
See?
That's my TIE five.
We should trade careers. There we go.
What am I going to do?
What you just did.
Oh, what are you going to do?
Whatever you do.
What do I do? There needs to...
Here's the thing. I was going to say coordinate volunteers, but yeah. I was going to try and be specific. But then if I try to be specific, then it sounds condescending about your job. Oh. I go, I'm going to tell people where to park.
Oh, I love this. I love this game now. Now the game is we do stand-up comedy about each other's career as if I'm you.
Oh.
So now I'm you. Okay. I've got this hot wife that is ridiculously attractive. She can eat 4-pound cakes for breakfast. She's trying to force ice cream on me like it's a bathtub. And she comes out even skinnier. Somehow eating calories makes her burn calories. It drives me crazy how attractive my wife is. And then she poops out these two amazing children that all I want to do is bury in the backyard. I'm Justin Warsham.
You're so much better at this than I am.
All right, now, stand-up comedy about being a director of hospitality at a medium-sized church in Hollywood.
Here's Here's what I got to deal with. You try finding a way to get Jesus into the life of a hipster in the middle of Los Angeles. Los Angeles is a freaking cesspool of people who are self-centered, here trying to live some kind of delusional dream of some kind, and I'm supposed to get into their soul, their inner being, and help them find light through a cup of coffee? That's what I'm supposed to do. You expect me to do that? I have a child at home and a wife I'm trying to care for, and the only way I can start a conversation is with coffee or a freaking bake sale. And you want me to really save people when the only people that are showing up for a bake sale and a cup of coffee are the crazy homeless people.
That's right, preach it.
I'm Kevin Miller and I approve this message.
This guy's good. This
Joseph guy's Barkley really good. Is an asshole.
.com.
Oh my God. I am gonna get that.
Oh, man.
Why did we not think of that?
You probably could get me fired. that probably could
just
do it.
Picture Joseph Barkley is an asshole.com. Yeah. Picture you going, like, with two six shooters.
Yeah, that might, at least a verbal written.
That'd be awesome. Well, you wouldn't be on the Who Is record. I'd gladly put his name on there. I would put it all in his name.
Well, now, but you've let the cat out of the bag.
He doesn't listen to the show anymore.
Are there any video games dealing with stand-up comedy?
No, there are not. There
really
are
not any Grand Theft Autos? You don't go in a stand-up comedy club? Or...
No, not that I've seen or remember. I want to say, though, that maybe in L.A. Noir.
Yeah, I was going
to.
I
feel like there was some kind of thing that had to do with it. Like, I don't think you ever saw him do it.
Yeah.
But there was a guy who was maybe a stand-up guy.
Why can't games do comedy well?
I think they do.
Name a game that has made you laugh out loud, like a good sitcom. Like Ninja Turtles, the Nickelodeon, I laugh throughout it. And I'm not a child. But I will laugh watching it because the jokes are well-timed with the action intermixed. You are playing a game where... The action is just intrinsic to it. Games, action, taken care of, check. Why?
That's interesting.
Can't we get some good jokes in there?
Because the only ones that I could think of are funny. It's also not an area that I'm kind of new to it, but it's like the Ratchet and Clanks. Those are kind of funny and well written,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
It's not like. Yeah. I would not laugh as hard as that as I have at Everybody Loves Raymond.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I'm like, oh, that's cute. I get it. That is funny. I get what you're. There's a but lot of I get what you're doing.
There's humor. It's fun, but I can watch a DreamWorks movie, watch Ice Age or any of those, and they're funny. Mm-hmm. Like you do it and it makes you laugh. The closest again that I've ever experienced to something that made me laugh was Ghostbusters the video game, where it had intentional jokes that said something
because
that was
it
funny.
Was. And here, this is my theory, and it is entirely unfair, and mm-hmm. I think it might be wrong, but. My thought was that comedy is like the reason I started doing stand up when I moved to Los Angeles, which I think actually will still tie into an email we have later. But when I moved to Los Angeles and started to pursue acting, I quickly realized that I was going in and there were 10 guys that looked like me or I looked way less attractive than these guys. And I was constantly being reminded of how ugly I am by getting, all right, here's your breakdown. You're the out-of-shape guy or the overweight guy or the schlubby guy.
And you're not out-of-weight schlubby enough to be that guy.
No, well, yes, maybe not over a top. There was one that it's like, we want the overweight guy, and they were like, it's kind of a stretch for you.
Yeah.
Because they wanted somebody really big,
big.
But, so anyway, after doing that, I was just like, you know, and I go, I just feel like there's so many things that you have to do to make these things line up to be able to build a career that I need something that is more input-output. Like, whatever you put into it, you get out of it.
Yeah.
And I stumbled upon doing stand-up, and in the books I read, that they said the nice thing about stand-up is that if you're funny and you work at it, then you'll be able to make a living.
Yeah.
And so that's why I started doing the stand-up. Is because it was this natural thing. What got me onto that? Oh, so here's my point.
Comedy.
So comedy has this natural filter to it, and it is I think it is a very hard thing to achieve that very few people can honestly do it really, really well,
yeah.
And especially in the written form.
Yeah.
And so when you have somebody who can do it well in the written form, then they usually go on to the most lucrative, and by lucrative, I mean whatever hours you put into it versus the money you make from it, and it usually is film. And then after that is television. Mm-hmm. And my assumption is that if you are writing for a video game, the man hours are so insanely long that it's hard when somebody who could write a really funny video game could go, I could work in a 6-hour day.
Oh, interesting.
And go do this at a TV show.
That might be true. That
you know
might
what I
be
mean?
True. But it seems to me that with the Pacific Ocean size sea of writers out there, that some studio with some cash would say, you know what? Let's get some comedy writers on this. Like, let's stop throwing money at the wrong thing.
Because, but it's not something the market is dying for. It's something that you and I just kind of stumbled on right now.
We've mentioned it before.
Yeah. But I'm saying that it's not something that when we talk about gaming, it's not something that everybody's like, oh, great, yes, I can be a virtual soldier and fight terrorists. But where are the jokes? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Nobody's really doing that. What they but care what we... about is what it looks like and what is it like to play,
yeah.
ultimately. But I do think that you're right in that if somebody did do that,
mm-hmm.
that it would be such a huge diversion that it would be a humongous hit.
That's exactly it. And I think we're starting to see that. I think this last generation of game consoles is really going to push narratives in general. You have games like Two Souls that are like, we're going to talk about the afterlife and we're going to take it serious. You got Last of Us that you're playing right now that is really trying to focus on solid performance and an interesting narrative. And I think we're going to see people try to move into markets that we haven't done with this open-ended user choosing narrative,
mm-hmm.
where somebody's going to go, you know what would be great is something that's actually funny, not that something that's supposed to be funny, like Jar Jar Binks. I think that we've seen tons of games that you could tell that was supposed to be a joke, or they're like
Grand Theft Auto has a lot of those where it's like they're the kooky character,
yeah.
And what that made me think of is that it's funny that video games seem to, you know how if you watch movies from like the 50s and then you compare them today, like even a really good movie from the 50s that has like cinematic praise, let's say you put on Citizen Kane,
mm.
and then you watch Godzilla with Matthew Broderick.
Okay.
Now you watch that as a person, I think you are innately going to be more entertained by Godzilla with Matthew Broderick than you are Citizen Kane.
Probably.
And I think it's because performance has evolved as well. Like, not only the technology, but I think that what is acceptable for you to do in a scene is, like, what you could do then is no longer... Like, if you watch those old... talked about it, the Batman serials, too. Like,
is another
example where it's like, we couldn't watch that.
What you're describing is media literacy. And
right.
And we as a culture have become more attuned to something on television looking more like what reality actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Because Citizen Kane is a billion times better than Godzilla.
Right.
Is your point. But our ability to be able to watch a film as an audience has increased, and the ability to create a movie has increased, down to like editing and those sort of things. Those conventions didn't exist, but now we as a culture understand it, and we can propagate it, and we can move it forward.
My point though is that I think that if you look at a game like Grand Theft Auto, that the character archetypes are almost based in like a 50s, 60s, like Western or something. There are these character archetypes that they just plug in to fit this, and it's an over the top stereotype of some kind.
And I would go back
like a hop scene from Bonanza.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I think that's why my example of Phantom Menace is so appropriate to this, because it was George Lucas, for all of his genius, had this idea of doing this comedy character without actually having any idea of what comedy was or how to tell a story that had any comedy in it at all. And things that we think are funny, like poop jokes, are not actually funny.
Yeah.
And that was the mistake that for the next seven generations they'll be damning him for making this choice of trying to do comedy without actually doing comedy. And I think what you're describing we see in games all the time, that people want to do comedy. We're going to put something funny in here, so we do something that's supposed to be funny instead of it actually being funny and writing a joke.
And it's also, this is more of my ignorance within the industry, is that I feel like a lot of the people doing writing also come from a technical background more than they necessarily...
Depends.
You know
they're
I mean?
Probably more comic book artists. That if they're not someone on staff that is just kind of funny or an animator that's got a flair for narrative or for dialogue, then they will hire a novel or a comic book writer or a person that writes for video games. But you're right. It's very rare that they see somebody grab, you know, a famous television writer or somebody that's working in media or in film or whatever, which is probably to the detriment of it because video games are more like television and film than they're ever like comic books. Mm-hmm. It's just that the material is similar to comic books in that they're more imaginative, more explosive, maybe some cartoons. But a cartoon writer will understand video games better, I think, than a comic book writer would.
Yeah, and I think that what that made me think of is that I think Deadpool, which is what I was thinking of mm-hmm. too, is I think that Deadpool is kind of really going at being an action comedic game.
That'll be fun.
It fits into his character, fits into like what you were talking about too about comic books. The other thing that made me think of is that I think, as we know, comedy is all about timing. And
what's it about?
Timing. Oh. And that if
what
you,
is it about?
Timing.
It also comes in threes.
But that
this
when
is
you
the
have...
Justin and Kevin School of Comedy College podcast, brought to you by Snake Staples. When you have to staple a snake.
Wow, that was one of those moments where we genuinely cracked ourselves up. That doesn't get more this we made ourselves laugh.
Oh, it would have been so great had I been able to get it out.
I don't think I've ever heard you laugh that hard at yourself, though. That's great.
The problem is that I kind of had an out-of-body experience there. I was like, I'm actually gonna pull this off. Snake staples.
You tried to staple your snake.
If you're listening to this and you're in an environment where you can say something out loud without being considered crazy, or if you can't, it'll make it even more fun. But I dare you to say snake staple right now or staple a snake, and you'll see how much fun it is to say and why I stop. We'll wait. See, it was pretty good.
But I think with like loading and stuff like that, that the timing might also be hard to be able to hit.
You would have been right 7 years ago or on the PS2 or something, but not anymore.
But I mean, that also could be what, you know what I mean? Like it drives trends.
Oh,
everything
sure.
is always going to follow whatever made the most money last.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know
yeah.
what I mean? That's the direction that everybody's going to go. So if in the beginning it's hard to create comedy and it's not like people are sitting, there's not many comedy writers that are like, you know what? I also love video games, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a hilariously funny video game. And it's also hard because I'm assuming that everybody who's in the entertainment or in even the video game industry has some level of an understanding of how subjective comedy is.
Yeah.
Whereas everybody can relate to a concept of like Last of Us, like the post-apocalyptic world, the survival aspect of it. There's things that you can connect to where comedy is very subjective, and so you could do one direction of comedy, like say George Lucas thought he was doing with fart jokes,
yeah,
and then it can alienate a section of the demographic because maybe they're more into nerdy references,
yeah,
or something
agree.
Along
I would
those
agree.
Lines.
You know, the one game that I have laughed out loud from recently is DuckTales Remastered.
Oh, really?
I can't tell. First, I don't know if the dialogue was originally in the game because they've added the voice actors to it, but I'm definitely laughing at it. But I also don't know if it's because it touches my childhood that I'm like, Gyro, he's talking funny. Your Launchpad McQuack. Maybe. It's also... It seems like it's pretty funny.
They also have, there's a lot of these moments where I feel like comedic moments in video games are much like they were in silent films. Like, that,
yes.
It's where it's like, that made me think of Mario Brothers. Like, I feel like there are bits of, like, takes in
yeah.
in the newer Mario
oh, man.
Brothers games.
That... There was a moment in Yoshi's Island, Super Mario World 2, where Yoshi has, you have this weird battle where you get eaten by a giant frog, and then you're inside of his stomach, and he eats things, and you grab the things that he eats, and you spit him back out and hit his, what's essentially the little dangly thing, yeah, in the back of his throat, but it's inside his stomach. And so when you win, you go the other way, and you get plopped out of the back end, and then the frog explodes, and Yoshi makes this deadpan and just stares at you wide-eyed with his eyes looking directly at the screen like, can you believe what just I just got shat out of a giant frog? And my brother and I laughed and laughed that they actually made that joke of him like, yeah, that happened. But you're right, it's a little silent filmy, but still, I can see Yoshi's face of like,
It's funny because while you're sitting there, when you're giving the setup to that, in my mind, I'm going, the funniest way is for that, because that game is so two-dimensional.
Yeah.
The funniest moment is for him to stop, look directly out of the television, and just blink.
Yep. Yep.
In like shock and awe.
Like a Muppet.
And then immediately snap out of it and go doop, 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 and go right back to
it. That's
it.
I think it's slow, like
they
pinhole
did a slow
clothes.
Fade.
Yeah, on his, like, and onto his eyes. Now I have to go play that game. Let's go behind the controller.
Where is it? It's under the couch.
Wait, I meant to the entertainment center.
pick up the couch and pull out the TV, guys.
Pre-production. So last week I didn't get to tell you what I was playing, but right now on my PS Vita, I have been playing a game that was downloadable called Sinmora or Sinmora. I'm not sure. It's Italian or something. Mm. It's this game here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you play it on your PS Vita?
I do not have that on my PS Vita.
You should get it. Oh,
I need to find some new games for my PS Vita. What happened?
Well, I was gonna load it up, but then I'd have to stop playing your Uncharted in the middle of it. But so I'll just describe it to you using my ability to use words.
Can't wait to see this.
So pretty
snake
pictures. When you got a staple of snake. I mean, why would you need to staple a snake?
More often than you're not, Kevin.
Could you imagine?
It's a problem that we all face on everyday life.
So,
especially people that live at deserts.
Gotta staple me a couple of these snakes together. I'm gonna put them on a desk. It's gonna make everybody laugh.
Thanks, Cletus.
You got it. Snake staples. So, you know, talking about game conventions and how things have changed, this game is a traditional 2D side-scrolling shoot 'em up airplane game.
Oh, wow.
Where, you know, like Battle 42 or any of those, but it's...
So it's not a top view, but a side view?
It's not top-down, but it's a side view. And there was plenty of games like that. That was going back to Atari. There were a lot of games where you go through caves and whatever. So this one has a time element to it where you can... you have, like, 40 seconds to beat a level, and then as you destroy things, you get more time on the clock. You also have the ability to control time. You can slow it down. You can speed it up, depending on what's happening. So you're supposed to be like, it's a little like Sky Captain of the World of Tomorrow. It's sort of this, you know, biplanes and against mechanized cannons on tracks and stuff. So it's pretty imaginative. It's very Japanese-ish. And that style. And so all that's really fun. And there's just a ton of action coming at you. They'll shoot guns. And, you know, there's like 50 bullets coming at you all at once. And you have to, like, navigate through the bullets so you don't get hit. But the reason why it catches my eye and why I think it's fascinating is that it is a three-dimensional game. So it's all in 3D modeling. Everything about it is 3D. You even as you play, you'll be wrapping around a building or wrapping around a track or loop, you know, the mountain will move. You're a three-dimensional object.
In
everything.
Two-dimensional gameplay.
But the gameplay is up, down, back, forward. You don't control
depth.
The pitch isn't part of it if it were a piloting game. So it takes all the fun and beauty and dimension of a three-dimensional game and makes it extremely accessible to anybody picking it up. That you can hand it to a kid and they'd be like, oh, I get it.
So to get it right in my head that the background scrolling is moving three-dimensional. So the animation is that you're spinning around this building in a corkscrew-esque fashion. But in the actual gameplay, you're only moving up, down, left, right.
So everything, the scene behind you will be spinning around, but you're moving. But then you'll finish a phase, and the camera will cross the line, as we say in film, and it'll spin around you 180 degrees, and you'll flip, and it'll show you from the other view. So then you're fighting a train on a track, and there are these cannons. You finally kill all the cannons, and then the camera will come behind you and come around and then show you that there are more cannons on the other side of the track, on the other side of the train, like left to right, and then you start fighting those as well.
That's
But it keeps it all on this two-dimensional plane the entire time. So it's really cool. It's a great way to kind of play with that dimension, make it really accessible. but also make it visually equivalent to today as opposed to just sprites moving back through the background.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, in our conversation about media literacy, that's where I see the convergence of gameplay versus technology. Instead of just keep playing games the same way or building games the same way, they're building games differently, using 3D modeling, using something that's interesting. But then instead of the constantly increasing the complexity of the game, making it something that's super simple. We can all do up, down, left, right. You know,
which
we
is
saw
a great idea for the Vita, is that you could put it, create a great game, but because you keep it simple, it's great mobile.
Yeah, and it's exactly like that. It's like playing Angry Birds or something. Super simple, easy to pick up.
Into a pig.
Yeah, and like I can go up, down, left, right. I can figure that out. And that's what we saw that like when the PS2 came out, they're like, oh, great, we have the ability to move through a world. And then suddenly the player has to worry about all three dimensions and camera angles. And, you know, you go over to someone's house to play Halo or whatever, and they're stuck in a corner and they're looking up the wall because it's you have to have that mind for being able to control the camera as well as the aim and all this at the same time. And then forget about actually doing the thing you're supposed to do. So you've seen this is a cool way of controlling the camera for the player, but still giving it, a fun, fresh take.
Yeah, I need to get some. I was thinking about that recently because I've been playing a lot of Madden on my Vita, but mm-hmm. I need to. I'm gonna just ditch Siphon Filter because I tried to pick it up and I'm just not into it. Like,
what is Siphon Filter?
Siphon Filter is an old PlayStation game. I think it was maybe PlayStation or PlayStation 2, possibly. I played the original Siphon Filter. Remember, I played that clip and it's that guy talks like Nick Nolte.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
And what I've got to go over here.
Ugh,
you know, like
that's great.
And I remember loving Siphon Filter, mm-hmm. but what I realized is that the reason I love Siphon Filter was because it was new. It was before SOCOM or any of that stuff. It was an action-adventure game.
It's like watching Heathcliff or Thundercats. You're like, this was amazing.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
And so it predates Splinter Cell and all those games. And so I'm like, oh, they made a sequel and I never played it. This would be fun. And Abe's Odyssey gave me a nostalgic part of, you know, even though I later realized that I was like 20 when I think Abe's Odyssey came out. But anyway.
Still nostalgic.
Yeah, but it gave me that, oh, and now I realize that what I need to do is I need to just play, like, I'm going to get the Rayman Origins game.
Or, yeah.
I'm hoping that soon
Legends,
they'll come out with Ratchet and Clank, like all of the games on the Vita. Yeah. Like, then I would play the hell out of those.
Or Sly Cooper. Would you play Sly Cooper?
I've already played it.
Would you play it on the Vita?
Oh, well, I think I finished them all now.
Yeah, I think you have.
Yeah.
So Rayman Legends and Origins is available. Origins is a little older. Legends is newer. Mm. Just came out last week, actually. Which one will you pick up?
I don't know. I don't know. I'll have to look at them.
Get the Origins. It's cheaper.
Okay. We'll start older. There.
But it's a port. So it came out on the Wii and whatever a little while ago. It looks great. In fact, when the Vita first came out, it was the game I'd show people. This is how cool the Vita is because it was simple and it looked beautiful.
That's what I think. I think I'm going to get my platforming gaming off of the Vita, and then I'll still get the Madden game to fill in between those and all that stuff, and it keeps me boned up on my skills.
Nice, yeah. So, gotta keep fresh.
Keep fresh. I wanted to talk about, are we still in the entertainment center? Are
we can go
time?
Wherever.
Okay, because for a long time ago, a month ago probably, we got an email from a listener that was asking about my thoughts on the new owner mode on Madden.
Oh, yeah.
And so I got the Madden 25, and it's all the same functionality that it had before, but what they did was they gave an interesting consequence to that. And now you could follow fan tweets, and they comment on, the cost of concessions, the cost of jerseys. You have memorabilia. There's a dynamic to players that sign. There's a new attribute called personality. So when you sign a new player and they have a high rating for personality, they have a strong chance of becoming your star players. And so you usually have about a top four or five players, and that's the one that everybody buys their jersey based on how much personality they have. And then that also comes into play in negotiating their contracts and stuff like that.
Whether or not they sign a football with a Sharpie.
Yes.
Is the guy still playing?
No, he retired.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's also the mini game, if you would, is to try to build, although there's not like, oh, you did it, now you're done, but you get to build your team into being the number one valued franchise.
Oh,
so right
that is
now,
fun.
And my Niners are the eighth ranked franchise, and it's
winning
really...
Super Bowls, I imagine, helps.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that, so, like, I could only offer potato chips, French fries, soda, and a chicken salad.
Or potato salad, or baked potatoes, or I think we're sponsored by Idaho.
Yeah. No, I only have, like, four, I think, items on my concession, and it's because my stadium is so old that I can't even upgrade my concession stands to offer more.
And you are at Candlestick?
I am at Candlestick. So when it goes, you need to upgrade your stadium, so I go to the stadium to upgrade it. My stadium is currently under construction and will be available in 2014.
Just like reality.
So in the game, next year, I will get to play in the new Santa Clara Stadium, cool, and upgrade it as the owner. There's a great dynamic that it lets you do, where just like it did with the coaches that had motivator, strategist, and team builder, three different kind of coaches / general managers you got to play last year. At Madden 25, they have the former player, the lifelong fan, and then they also have the financial mogul.
Mm.
So the guy who owns the Jaguars is a financial mogul. He's who likes football but had a ton of money. An example of lifelong fan, they said, is Bob Kraft, is the owner of the Patriots. And then
he's a lifelong fan.
Yes, I can't remember who they had as an example.
But he's also a financial mogul.
I think Tom Landry was a former. I guess what they're trying to say though is that, like, nobody knows who the guy who owns the Jacksonville Jaguars, unless you're a big fan.
Right.
But
everybody seems to know who Robert Kraft is.
Everybody knows who Bob Kraft is, yep, because he also defines himself as being a huge fan.
Oh, I see.
Like, he grew up. That's his story.
Yeah.
The reason he owns the Patriots is because he grew up there and was a fan of the Patriots when he was younger.
I see.
That's the idea of at least that element. So I made myself as a lifelong fan of the Niners, and I'm an owner, and did that. So that was cool.
So, you know, that was cool.
That was all right.
I own the Niners.
I own the Niners now, cool, and I wear T-shirts because I'm a man of the people in my millions. But what's an interesting thing is that, so it records whether your sales are up or down on your merchandise, your concessions, your ticket sales. People tweet that they love how they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how cheap that is. And that's kind of a sign to, like, you might want to increase the prices. Or they tell you, oh my gosh, it's way too expensive for this, and you lower it down. What's interesting, your values, so you have like a staple amount in your checking account kind of thing. If you have an away game, you still pay out salaries to your staff, but you have no money coming in, which I thought was really interesting.
Like,
so you can't
good.
Just blow through your money and then be negative money when it comes. I don't know how that works or any of that yet because I just started playing the game. But so to answer their question from months ago is that now – I think they did what I did not think they were going to do, was that they actually made it to where there is something at stake if you are in owner mode on the game.
So can I play owner mode without playing a single game?
I really think, and I wish that they had that. I guess it's not that important. But
Sim NFL owner.
Yeah, they had that. You remember head coach is what they had, but and then they also had a there was a computer game called Front Office that EA Sports put out that was like Madden Front Office, and that you were just the general manager, and you just negotiated
just
contracts.
Just the general manager.
You couldn't even watch the games, but you would see them kind of simulate and how the scores happened and what the plays
cool.
did.
Yeah,
or you could just simulate the game and find out the stats afterwards. But another interesting thing about the new owner mode on Madden, I don't know if it does it if you're a head coach as opposed to an owner, but there's a media question.
Oh, what
and
is
based
that?
Based on how
oh,
you
yeah.
answer the media question. So, like, it says, how do you respond to the people saying that, you know, just because you're a fan doesn't mean that you should own the team, you know, kind of thing.
Yep.
And like, there's three options, and I chose the option of saying, well, I think if we're winning, nobody's going to really care where I came from, is the one I chose. And so what that means is that it puts, if you win, your team popularity goes up by 15%. If you lose, your team popularity goes down by 20%.
Sure.
So in a sense, it's
so
saying
that...
You put a stake on,
what were some of the other options that you could have chosen?
One of the options was, I'm all about the fans. I know because I grew up a fan, and so I'm going to make sure that we do right by the fans. And I didn't choose that option, so I don't know what's at stake there. And then I think, what was the other one? I can't remember. I think it was something to the effect of, we're going to bring in the best guys, to bring home a championship or, you know, that kind of vibe.
Then if you don't bring in the best guys,
I guess then there has something at stake at that. But I'm pretty happy with it. it's an interesting dynamic to the game that I was batting. I created a league where I'm the coach, and then I created another league where I'm the owner of the Niners, and I was going to kind of try and play through both of them, but I think I might just play through as the owner just to try it. And if I hate it, I think I can retire and come back as a coach anyway, so it doesn't matter. But so that was all I had.
That sounds fun.
It is. I think that what I was going to say in response to what you said is that I think they do need to put that in there. At least a thing where you can. Back in the day, they had this thing where you could just hike the ball, hit X,
yeah,
and then your guys would play out the game.
Right.
You know what I mean? You could call the plays and all that stuff. Now, the only way you could do owner mode and not is you could just simulate the games, mm-hmm. and then you wouldn't have to play them at all. There was also an option, I think, where back in the day when you hit ready, is you would put your controller in the middle and then hit go. And so, in a sense, both teams would be controlled by the computer, and then you could watch the game.
Ah, that'd be cool. Like demo mode. Like broadcast mode.
You might
or
even be able
yeah.
to do that on Madden 13, but I don't know. But that's all on the Entertainment Center, I think. Now we've talked about that, right?
I want to go to a new segment
oh, boy.
We have called Nerd Rage.
Yes.
But I need you to hit stop.
Oh.
Nerd Rage.
And we're back with Nerd Rage.
Nerd Rage. Nerd Rage. That's not okay, Nerd Rage.
I'm so angry.
So one of the best Nerd Rage fake punts was what I was going to say, was that wonderful article on The Onion that the guy wrote about the Nerd Rage he had from it going to see the third Batman movie, mm-hmm. Dark Knight mm-hmm. Rises, and then Nerd Raging about how about the scene that took place in the football field. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that article? I shared it with you. And so he says, you know, we saw this movie because we saw it had football in it, and we were so disappointed because it only had like 3 minutes of football references. And then it just tore apart all the factual inconsistencies of
the fact that evidently that the team was supposed to be the Steelers.
Yeah.
And that Bill Cowher was the coach,
right.
Even though he hadn't coached the Steelers in 6 years.
Yeah, what's the point? Get it right. And why would Aaron Rodgers be there?
And how could this guy just walk onto the field? You know,
with security.
Yeah.
And
the field would fall apart and everybody would just sit there in the stands.
And Grand Rapids is not a major market city. And yeah. They would never have a football team that could play against a city like Gotham. And it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So I wish that this was that.
that it was sarcasm or
that would, it was
satirical?
Fake. Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish it was. So there is a website. I saw The Hobbit finally on Blu-ray because we have a child and we can't go out to see movies. So for our 3-year wedding anniversary, we popped in the epic movie The Hobbit that takes about as much time to watch as a season of 24. Jeez, this movie is long.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Beautiful. And I didn't mind going into it because I was like, I know it's long. So we actually took like intermissions. I think it took us 4.5 hours
yeah.
to finish the movie. But it was decent. So I couldn't remember the book The Hobbit, and I knew that there wasn't originally enough material for them to break it into 3 films. It was like, they've got to be doing some stretching here, pulling from other material, all of which is fine. But I knew that there are people that love Tolkien so much that they loved him before it was cool to love nerdy things.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they have dedicated copious amounts of websites to it. So there's one called theonering.com. And they have a whole section in here of nerd raginess that discusses the differences between the movies and the books for all 4 films that have been made to date. So they go through all the movies, and they'll give you the discrepancies. It's great for me because I haven't read the books in years, and I'm not going to just to be like, oh, that was different in the book. That was different in the movie. But it's good that they broke it down. And so I was really impressed of like, oh, this is good, and this is helpful. And each of the discrepancies has a 4 entries, the film version, the book version, then a pro for the change, and then a con. So,
yes, please.
Now, for the most part, the thing that's fascinating about it is that it does a really good job of reporting. The film version just gives you, like, in a sentence and a half, like, you know what the film was. Then it gives you the difference in the book real fast, and then it gives a very solid reason why they made the pro that changed the from the book to the film, usually citing things like it's more economical this way, it makes more sense for a film version, the movie's moving faster, you have to emotionally tie yourself to characters, things that people know when you make a film. So I don't know if this is somebody's blog or if they're surmising statements about pros and cons, but it's very well written. But then the problem is, because they leave con for last, I can only assume that the website's stance is con, because it gets the last word, but they're incredibly weak arguments most of the time for why it's a bad idea to change from the book to the film. Let me give you one of my favorite examples. So, Dwarves Out of the Hood. Film version. The dwarves who come to Bilbo's door are hoodless. Their beards are normal, human color, and their clothing color is dark and muted colors. This is a discrepancy enough for them to create an entry in the book. Or in this website. Book, as the dwarves arrived at Bag End, they described as follows. Dwalin has a blue beard and a dark green hood. Balin is a white beard and a scarlet hood. Keeley, Feely each have yellow beards and blue hoods. Dori, Nori, Ori, and Orin have and Gloin have two purple hoods and a gray hood, a brown hood, and a white hood. Beelford, Borford, and Boomer.
That sounds like more hoods than dwarves.
Exactly. Have two yellow hoods and a pale green one, and Thorin is wearing a blue sky hood with a long silver tassel. Pro, the lack of hoods allow viewers to differentiate the dwarves through their hair and beard, styling without resorting to bright color clothing that would distract from the rest of the scene. Yes,
solid.
Exactly. That's exactly why they didn't have the seven dwarves walk in. They look like the rest of the film, and look like little dwarves. The con. These changes done for the sake of realism is an unnecessary departure from what is supposed to be a children's story. That's their reasoning. Bright colors makes it a children's story. How dare you remove these from it? Now, again, they took the time to be like, that was different. That was different. This one I love. Bilbo's contract. Film version. Thorin and the dwarves present Bilbo with a lengthy contract for his burglar services. Book version. Thorin and company leave Bilbo with a two-paragraph note written on Bilbo's own note paper left for him under the clock and the mantle. Very specific. Very specific. They need you to know what this was before this contract. If you remember the film, it's a very funny piece of business. He unrolls this thing and has like flaps on it. It's very legal mumbo-jumbo, and he mumbles to himself about how they won't keep him safe. The pro version. A lengthy note is more humorous prop, suggesting all the complications and dangers that await Bilbo. Exactly. It was funny. It
nailed
has style.
It
has wits. Yeah, it's everything. Con. This is an unnecessary deviation from Tolkien's story. That's it. That's why I bothered to note that it was different.
Because it was unnecessary.
Because it was unnecessary. It's not true to the original. They wrote a two-paragraph note and put it under a clock on the mantle. Damn it! Nerd rage! How dare you change that? How dare you change it?
Can you imagine there being something that you care about so much that would bother you?
Yeah. No.
That's where I get confounded.
This is a very well-written pros and cons. I mean, the website
is
well
laid out. Well, just that right there. See how you and I look at it, that it's like, I think what we're saying here is when you say we're well-written, that we're both on the same page of saying, clearly this is not a crazy person.
Yeah. Yeah. They're articulate. And a lot of Nerd Rage is rambling and just violent accusations. 95%, they have one point, and then they spend the rest of their time talking about how stupid and ignorant and hateful that other person is. Yeah. Really, they're talking to themselves.
Right.
They don't know that. Yeah. But they're just placing this blame on this other person that has no reason to have this label on them.
Right.
This is not that.
Nope.
They're very clearly able to articulate what the difference is and reasons for and against it. it. Concisely. I mean, it's an easy read, and it's quite fun.
Unnecessary deviation from the story.
You know, and one, I can't find it quick enough, but there's one that says...
If I had a talk show, I would have Phil Jackson on to talk about this.
Oh, that would be great. Like, let's just go through these. Why did you do this? Is that true? No. All right. Yeah. Why would you? Okay, yeah. This is my favorite. This is the best one. Betting on Bilbo. Film version. As they ride out of Hobbiton, Bilbo learns that the dwarves had bet Gandalf that Bilbo would not show up or go with them. Book, there is no equivalent passage. Meaning to say, they invented this entire sequence. Pro, the argument provides a reason for Gandalf... Oh, sorry, I just moved to the wrong page. Pro, the scene adds some welcome humor. It does. It doesn't say it here, but it also... it very quickly tells you the emotional connection that Gandalf has to Bilbo. It does some other things, but yes, it adds some welcome humor. Con, this new material takes screen time that would better devoted to the scenes that would found, sorry, I can't even get through it. The new material takes screen time that would be better devoted to scenes found in the book, because that is the ultimate goal of the movie. Is to read the transcript of the book on film. How dare you invent new material and cut out a lengthy four-paragraph sequence about what was in the stew? Nerd rage.
You know what's going to be great about this new segment is you and I getting rage filled over nerd rage.
I don't think I can do it. I don't think I have the patience.
Because that's now what's making me laugh is how angry you are at this person. Because now you need your snake staple gun because you're a snake eating itself. Like, you know,
like wheels within wheels, man. Wheels within wheels. But
that's the part that I feel has always been my weirdness with nerd rage. Is I just wish I could understand. I wish I had something I cared about that much.
Yeah.
I have children. And if people were upset at me about the way that I was raising my children and wrote me a letter or made a movie about it, I'd be like, eh.
Yeah.
I'd be like, whatever.
Okay. You. I've seen some things get underneath your skin, but you're often able to talk yourself down to the point where you don't actually do anything.
Yeah.
Which is the ultimate point. That's the mark of a mature person. Things should affect you. Words should have impact on you. That makes you not crazy. That makes you aware that your existence has repercussions, and it makes you not a celebrity. So you are able to receive that other people, and that's good that you internalize it, and then you choose a course of action of what to do with those emotions and those thoughts.
Because it bothers me that I could take my son to go see a Ninja Turtle movie and that they're going to be aliens and not mutants.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that bugs me.
Yeah.
But it's not, and it makes me go, ugh.
But you could also make the choice of not going to the film.
The sad part is that I will probably still go.
He's not going to do it.
I won't go to the movie theater. I'll rent it.
He changed his mind.
Oh, he did?
The nerd backlash was strong enough. It's like,
now
Xbox won it.
Now we're in trouble. Now we're in trouble because now that there's a precedent. You know what I mean?
For nerd rage?
Yeah.
I think the precedence is on the bad idea. Mm. I think Michael Bay pushed it because
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Teenage Alien Ninja Turtles.
That's my point. Like, yeah. you can't do that. I think that's why. Like, voting polls, you know, like, what's the population of people that are willing to go out and vote? They're the people that kind of care a little bit. But when you put something, like, the presidential election, then suddenly more people show up. You got enough, like, I would have been like, I'll sign a petition that says, please don't make that movie. Why waste America? why do this to yourself? Right. I won't go see it.
Although, it would have been pretty cool, say he didn't back down, and then somebody started a Kickstarter to make a real blockbuster, like just the millions of dollars that could be generated by Ninja Turtles fans. And if it could just eclipse the budget he has for that movie, it would just be amazing, in my opinion.
The thing that I don't get is why now? Like, why with the... I mean, Nickelodeon's Ninja Turtles are killing it. Mm-hmm. Just killing it out there, which is why the idea of a Ninja Turtle film even is on the table, because it's finally... It's relevant again for the first time in 15 years. to then go, yeah, I don't want to do that. I mean, he kind of gets away with the Transformers films just because it's more about watching special effects. You turn the music off.
Which
on
I think I heard on the radio that he is they're making new Transformer movies, but he's not involved.
That would be amazing.
They're
it's
making
too
a
late
new
though
one with Mark Wahlberg.
If they would start over and use the continuity created from the cartoons as original, those are still fascinating stories.
Yeah.
Much more interesting. The Secret War thing.
I don't care as long as there's a Peter Cullen in it. That's all I need.
Yeah. That guy.
Autobots rollout. God, I wish I had that guy's
Can you
voice.
Get that guy on here?
Oh, no. I mean, that's the thing I found with people when you ask them about guests is that because anybody could do a podcast, and anybody can send an email.
But
guess what? Also, for as many podcasts there are out there, times 10, there are podcast guest requests.
Yeah.
So
because everybody wants to make a podcast. The thing is, we are rare. You know this,
yeah,
right? There are not people that have do podcasts for 5 years, one show a week.
Yeah. And here's if we would have started it 4 years earlier than what we did,
we'd be 500 times more popular.
Yes.
Why didn't I come over sooner? Why didn't we get this idea?
I don't know.
We have time to go to the inbox.
Oh, boy.
Because you demanded it, segments.
Oh, Jesus. I accidentally hit a button.
That's the end of our very professional show.
After we just go, you know what? We are different. We are awesome. Why is that happening?
In the beginning, we got to talking about comedy. I really wanted to go down nostalgia lane and talk about Mario Paint, which is the song of our new opening. So let's make a note to talk about Mario Paint and awesome Super Nintendo games back in the day.
Let's do it. I love that.
We talked a little Yoshi's Island, but we'll bring it back around again.
All right. Hold on one second. Okay. Well, something happened with my email, and I cannot find the email. Yeah. Inbox crash. You've got no mail. And
these references just
I get it.
So great,
so you know, hot for the millennials.
Here's the deal. Here's the thing is that we've abandoned the millennials.
Yeah.
We really want to just talk to the dads of the millennials. So listen, if you were born after
and your iPod to your father,
if you were born after 1983, can you just stop listening now?
I think they have to be after 93. Right?
It's like 85 because you would be 15 around the millennial.
Oh,
the turn of the millennium, yeah.
So anyway, somebody though, and I'm sorry that I can't remember your name, but I do remember the question, was writing in to talk about, they said they were moving to LA and they wanted to get into acting and they wanted some opinions on getting an agent and all that stuff. So that's what we had as the question.
Well,
they wanted your opinion on that.
Getting an agent in voiceover in Los Angeles.
I would assume that that's what they're talking about.
Have you gone down this path? I mean, you're actually working more than I am at this point.
I have. I've started submitting demos to agencies about a month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. But I have not gotten any feedback. But it's my assumption that it is just like it is with the clubs. So in getting a comedy club, you have to be persistent without being annoying. And the way to do that is you don't check in every day. It's not like getting a job. My dad told me when I wanted to get a job, he goes, you just go down there every day and you'll show them that you're interested and then they'll just give you a job.
That would be true if you worked in a garage.
What do you mean?
That kind of mentality. If you showed up every day at a garage.
Right. Or a fast food place.
They'd be like, okay, he's dedicated and you showed some skill. Because it's not so relational, but it's more about, he means
but if,
it.
But if you send an email every day to a comedy club, then you're annoying because a comedy club is more like a dog year situation in that a week is a day for them.
Yeah.
And you don't want to send an email every day because they get bombarded with emails.
Because they don't have time to sit down and check their email every day.
So you could do it every month.
Especially if you send them a joke every day. Like, here's my joke I came up for you today.
Here you go. Although they do appreciate it. I found it's interesting because I originally stopped. I did not want to be funny in them because I thought that's what everybody tries to show off how funny they are, which makes them unfunny. And what I learned is that I'll do like 5 months of that, and then on the sixth month, I'll do something funny, and then sometimes they'll bite, not because it's funny. But it does work more often with getting guests on the show.
I've noticed,
That happened for me. But anyway, I think that the real story is that everyone will tell you is that the agent is actually supposed to find you, which it has been my experience that is the most frustrating part of that whole thing. Is that, and the reasoning behind that is that representation works for you ultimately. But in order for them to work for you, you need them to be excited about you because you want them to be like, oh, this guy's the next big thing. And here's what my opinion is on the whole agent-manager situation. Now, mind you, I am a guy who makes a living doing stand-up comedy. I do not have a successful acting career. I do not have any kind of industry situation or anything like that to where I'm not in development deals. So there are people that are much better at the networking side of it.
We get it. I am. We get it. You're not.
However, I am going to tell you how everyone is wrong. But I think that there is this idea that you think, oh, well, I just have to find a way to get an agent and then they will do the work for me.
Ah, yes.
And that is not the situation. So my approach would be is to come to Los Angeles. And if acting is what you want to do, if I could come to Los Angeles all over again and I want to do on-camera acting, I would take casting director workshops as often as I could afford. That's what I would do. If it was voiceover acting that you wanted to get into, I would find a regular part-time job, and I would create demos for myself and then post them up on the Voice 123 website or voices.com. I would probably start with Voice 123 in my personal opinion. And I would just do that and keep working. And then once you find that you're booking work, and then you can use that money to pay for better equipment and then use and then get some professional demos made. And then once you have professional demos made, then you could start taking some. There are workshops I've now learned that are available that you could do that to get in front of people. But really, it's in those workshops are not what they are said to be. Like the sales pitch on the workshop is that you're going to come here, a casting director or an agent or a writer is going to see you, and then now you're going to be a part of their circle, and they might cast you because they, oh, this guy's perfect for this. Now, while I'm sure there are situations where that happens, what you're really doing in all actualities, you're networking with the other people in your course.
Yeah.
That's what it's really all about, is that you're really there not to meet the guest. I mean, they might have information that you can offer, but it's just about being around other people and sharing ideas and building relationships on that level that then could eventually turn into, like, maybe they have some kind of success, and because they know you and think you're talented, then they'll refer you to their agent. If you ever have an audition, here's what I do know and has worked out for me if you're into on-camera stuff or even the voiceover stuff. It hasn't worked out for voiceover stuff, but I would assume it would apply. Is that if, say, you get called in for voiceover and you're in front of a casting director, then and you seem to do a good job and they, you know, they're complimentary beyond the, oh, thanks for coming in, good job, kind of thing, but you feel like there's something special about it, then you could say, you know, hey, I hope this isn't weird, but I'm looking for representation. Would you be willing to refer somebody? Or is there somebody you could recommend? And if they did like you, then a lot of times they'll go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they'll go to so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And then you say, oh, great. Do you mind if I mention your name? And they'll say, of course, please do it, because that's a convention.
Yeah.
That was something I found on doing some searching around online when I first moved to L.A. And so the next audition I had, I was actually tanking it, but I was making the casting director laugh. And I said, hey, just so I know that this couldn't go any worse, I'm actually looking for representation and wanted to know. He goes, Bonnie Black. I go, great. Should I just email? He goes, send her a headshot resume, put my name on the outside of it, she'll call you.
Yep.
And that's how I got my first agent in Los Angeles when I got here.
Yeah, I what I was going to augment your perspective with is your earlier point is that workshops and classes I do think are a really important element of getting an agent or just being a part of the scene because so it's really easy now to do exactly what you're doing now, sitting in a room by yourself and with an agent or without, and never meet anybody and never network. And it's how the game is played. It's how every business is run, is who you know, because you don't know if you can trust them. It's not really about, like, are you cool or not? Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that they just don't know if you're capable of it unless you meet them. Like, you have to, FaceTime is important. That's why human connection is important. So if you're moving to L.A., take classes left and right. And Justin's earlier philosophy about just showing up. Don't show up at the agent's house everywhere, but take every class that you can, because those networks and that connection will matter. And if people are hosting a workshop in a studio, over time, you will meet people. And frankly, you'll get better at it because you'll be working well.
Yeah.
So if you're serious about it and you really don't know where to start or what to do, shill out the money to take classes and take every class that you can get yourself in front of. Keep getting yourself in front of the microphone again and again and again. Even if everybody who meets you tells you, oh my gosh, you have such an amazing voice. I bet you do so great at voice acting. That's probably true. But until you start meeting people that can make a, that can empower you to do that professionally, it doesn't matter how many strangers tell you how great your voice is because they're not going to hire you.
And I think the biggest obstacle that people put in their own way is that sense of entitlement, that they think that they are talented beyond whatever they're getting, or they get obsessed with the show business aspect of it and how they're treated. If you come in and you treat it like a job, that you're going to bust your hump to do it, I really do truly believe that eventually it will work out, that if you just put your nose to the grindstone, that while it may not work out in the way that you intend, like as an example, I started off doing stand-up comedy with the full intention of being a guy who could eventually sell out theaters and maybe turn down a development deal on sitcoms. Now, I didn't honestly think that was a reality, but that was that's how I work. I'm like, I have to have a light at the end of the tunnel so that I have a plan in action. And what came out of it was I realized that the only thing I could control is what I create. And so I just started creating as much content as I could. I didn't know about Louis C.K.'s thing if he only does his bit for a year or anything like that because it hadn't been around. So I said, I'm going to make myself do a CD at least every 3 years. If at 3 years, I have to drop what I'm doing and move completely on because I'd seen guys doing the same material for 8 years. And I just didn't think that's what people wanted to see. And so what came out of that as a consequence, not through any planning or anything like that, I get played on Sirius Satellite Radio more than Dane Cook and Daniel Tosh. And I get a paycheck from it.
Yeah.
And it changed my life. And it was not part of the plan or anything. All it was a consequential result of my hard work.
And see, that's exactly it. And to staple this snake, to go full circle, the what Justin was mocking is that working at a church in Hollywood, we get hundreds of transplants. I mean, people move to L.A. in droves every year. And they move out of L.A. in droves every year because they don't get what they thought they were going to get when they move here. And Los Angeles is a town filled with transients, of people who come here who think they're going to get what they want and then take it home with them, their fame, their success, their money, whatever it is. And then they're going to go back to their hometown and be the person that they want to be. But LA is a stepping stone from that. If you walk here with that intention, you won't be the first one to do that, but you are not as likely to succeed. Mm-hmm. Now, people succeed all the time with that in mind, but the people that really succeed are the ones that move here with the intention of doing the actual work that want to be an actor. If you move here because you want to be a voiceover actor and you love being in front of the microphone and you love creating voices and you love meeting people that love to do the same thing and you just can't wait to stare at another script and try to do a cold read and you're begging to do another take because you think you got another way to do it, then move to Los Angeles and become a voiceover actor. If you're waiting to get a fat paycheck for doing very little work of talking in a microphone because you think you've got funny voices, don't waste your time, man. Yeah. You're going to leave with a broken heart and waste years, your best years of your life, where you could be developing a marketable skill for yourself back in your hometown. And that is, I've seen it and I'll see it every day that I live in Los Angeles. That's why it's filled with bitter people. It's because they want the success without wanting the work.
Yes. You have to think about what you're naturally good at. That's what I think really works. And it's like we were talking about at the dinner table, my 5-year-old son wants to be a football player.
Yeah.
Now, in my mind,
which was adorable,
right? In my mind, I can, as a father, you don't sit there and look at it and go, I need to crush that dream because the chances of that being real are, and I'm not talking about just the fact that because he's five, what I'm trying to use that as an example is that say he cultivates that, because here's what I wish would have happened in my childhood. When I was his age, I was watching Bill Cosby as himself and thought that was the best. I was watching it like it was a cartoon.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Now, if my dad would have, and my dad was a great dad, but if my dad would have looked at me and said, you know, that's a stand-up comic. Here's some things about stand-up comedy that you might want to know, blah, 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 blah. Then it may have helped me to understand that it could be a real job that I could do one day. And it could have, you know, just started me down the path that I didn't start stepping on until I was 27 years old. So for Jacob, if football is his passion, then I will watch it with him. I explained to him the rules of the game and try and tell him who's what. Now, I know he's five, so his attention span isn't there to watch a 3-hour game. But I am also ready with like what we discussed at the table, where I will say, now physically you may not be able to compete, but if you love football, there are lots of other jobs that are associated with football.
Exactly. It's like when you're a child, there are like 9 jobs that you can have that you don't understand, and then whatever your parents do.
Yeah.
So there's like baseball, there's some sort of professional sports person, then there's the civic services, a policeman, doctor, mailman. Those are all on the same thing. Then there's like teacher, because you see that in
did
your
you
world.
Say veterinarian yet?
Yeah, then the veterinarian, I didn't say that it's like some sort of hybrid animal. And then maybe a zoologist if you have a school like that, a marine biologist, whatever. Garbage man's one of them.
Mailman.
And then like store, you work in a store.
Yep.
And then there's office thing, you're not sure. And then there's president.
Jack at school tells his teachers that his mom goes to the park every day.
Oh, that's...
When she's working, she's going to the park.
Because that's...
He doesn't even... I don't know where it comes from.
Got it.
I don't know if it doesn't even rhyme with work. Sounds similar, but he says she's at the park.
And then you get older, and then like you suddenly realize there's some industries, and then you think you're going to be that thing within the industry. You're going to be the writer. You're going to be the actor. You're going to be the football player. And then you understand, like, oh, I can fit this niche. And then what really happens, you go to school to learn that thing, and then it turns out that you were never destined for that, and then you end up working in some like micro industry because somewhere somebody was willing to give you money to do a thing. And that's how you end up with a job that you then explain to your kid that gets matched up with against baseball
park.
Player. Yeah. Going to the park. Because nobody ever told Natalie that she would be a killer loan salesman.
No.
I didn't know that you could sell loans for a living until I was in college, maybe.
But I don't know. I'm testing this theory on my kids, is that I do think you could see at a very young age what they are into, and you could cultivate it, and that you can help them find a career and a passion. Or here's the other thing, is that what always bothers me about this is that like people always say, I want to be a voiceover actor, but nobody ever says, I want to be a plumber. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I think, is that I also think that there are lifestyles that you can have that, especially in the technologically advanced world that we live in, that you could do the job that you didn't necessarily aspire to do. But it could give you the means to do what you love to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think my dad is an example of that. My dad has a natural ability to fix things. It doesn't matter what it is. He didn't graduate high school, but he works on anesthesia machines. So for anybody who doesn't know what that is, these are the machines that keep people alive when you're in surgery. A high school dropout is the man who's responsible for repairing those machines because he has a natural ability to fix things. He does not enjoy it.
Yeah.
He does not love it. He understands that he has a natural ability to fix things. What he really likes doing is like carpentry and fixing things around like a house and laying tile and landlord type stuff. So what he's done is he's done this job as a means to do what he ultimately likes to do, which is like ham radio, that kind
of
crap.
Because the job of tending to a house like a contractor with all the details, he would not be able to pick and choose unless he was a billionaire.
Yes.
I'm going to do the tile work just in the bathroom.
Right.
And then I'm going to do the stone work just in the kitchen.
Right.
Not the whole house.
Right.
Which is what you would have to do if you're a contractor. I don't feel like figuring out the pipes. He can do that because it's his home.
Yep.
I just want to work on this one thing. I feel like taking down the drywall and hanging this other thing up.
Yeah, I feel like having a demolished bathroom for 2 years.
Because that's what interests him. But because he's willing to finance that passion with something that allows for it, that works within his skill set. Now, going back to your son, what I think is exciting about it is that you will do a good job of leading him through this process of right now it's, I want to be a football player. And you will do the thing that your dad didn't necessarily do to you of say, well, here are the things that you could do for that. And it will either
and I will
do,
say things like, you could be a coach.
Yeah.
You could work in the front office.
Because
you could answer the frickin' phones.
It will do one of two things. It will either instill in it, it will germinate this true passion in for him that will grow into a lifelong career in the football industry in some form, either as a player
he
could or
be a high school
sidelines.
Coach and
something.
Still have a decent living.
Or it will kill it because he'll see that there is work attached to it, and really he just
thinks, does not interest him.
Yeah, that really it's just that I like the uniforms and I think it's cool that they're running around.
I think it might actually be that he plays a little bit of football with his friends at school, and it might be other kids have said they want to be football players.
Yeah,
and he likes to watch football. He likes it, and he gets and
either
he
way.
Gets into it,
you'll do him a service in that you'll grow him in the direction, or so that you can find something. or kill it so that he doesn't grow up to be 17.
Because I think his real passion is, which I'm trying not to force upon him, is I really think it is some form of media in that he loves film. He loves everything he plays has a music to it. Like, he likes the idea of all of that. And when football comes on, his thing is he immediately wants to go get his little phone, the iPhone, it's an iPod Touch, and he plays that NFL flick quarterback.
Mm.
That's what he wants to do while watching the game. Like, that's how his mind works. And so I'm trying to, I've asked him a couple times, I'm like, hey, do you want to mess around with the video camera and we can make like a little movie with your guys while you're playing? He's like, eh. He's like, I don't want to do that. But I do think that eventually that's where his mind may lead. Now, I don't think he's necessarily going to be a film producer. He's
sure,
not
going
to be J.J. Abrams or Steven Spielberg.
And that's what it comes down to, is whether or not he's an author of the things or if he's a consumer of them.
Yeah.
And that will be the transition.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to say, here, do you want to create this?
Yeah. And it would be the same thing for football. Do you want to consume it, or do you want to be a contributing factor to it?
And hopefully I can help him find something that he can generate and then use that to make money.
And that's how you get a voiceover agent in L.A.
Perfect, guys. Nailed it. Pretty much nailed that. That only took us 20 minutes. Yeah. So we're fine.
Well, that was good.
The other one last thing, and I always say this as a caveat to, I also teach workshops to other stand-up comics on how to get booked on the road. And the biggest thing that I tell them that is unassociated with what they are trying to do is the financial aspect of it. Until you can learn to manage your finances and live beneath your means, then it is very, very difficult, I think, to build a career in any form of entertainment. And the way that I did it, I don't know that it's the only way, but the way that I think saved my life is through Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover book, is that we went, literally my wife and I had three jobs each and didn't have a penny between any of us. And after doing the book and learning to budget and stuff like that, we each only had one job making half what we were making, but had enough money to do whatever we wanted to do. And then when things got tight, instead of having our whole life crumble, it just kind of got a little tighter for us. And then we just pushed through and came out on the other side. So that's my opinion on that. And I hope that helps. That was our show. That was good. I feel good about that.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've done a good one. I've been a little worried we jumped the shark. Staple that snake.
I think we jumped the shark, and now we're coming back around to do another run.
Probably. We're cool.
I mean, we've changed our name four times.
Yep. It's time for a name change.
All right. Really? Already? I feel like we've only had this one for a month.
It's not clicking. It's like New Coke. People want to go back to old New Coke.
Well, send us an email to show at GamerlandPodcast.com with your new title suggestions. Or you can send them to Facebook.com/GamerlandPodcast. Or you could send them to us at Twitter at GamerlandPod. Or you could send new name suggestions, or more importantly, just throw a like to Facebook.com/IWantSlyCooper in his own animated series, so we can Betty White this bitch and make it happen.
We're not going to make that a t-shirt, man. That's so great.
We can. Let's do another one of the Keep Calm. I like those shirts. Keep Calm and Sly On or something like that.
That's good, yeah. That's
or
good.
Circle Button On, or I don't know. We'll workshop it, not on the air.
Okay, great.
On behalf of my good friend,
Circle Button.
Some would call him my new friend, Kevin Miller. This is Just Worship saying, okay, bye.